those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome to the Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. Welcome back. Joining me in the studio is Brian Darling, Coburg Councilist. First time we've had him on the show, actually, since he was elected. So we're going to talk to him about how his first year or so has gone. Also, a number of reports that have come down in the last little while. Rob Washburn is my usual co-host for this event as well for this week's version of Consider This Live. Before we get to the conversation, we always do the theme song for the conversation. So here is John Mellencamp, Small Town, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, that's probably where they bury me.
All right, welcome to the show, everybody. That was Small Town by John Mellencamp. Not John Cougar Mellencamp. This must have been just the Mellencamp years, 1985. Welcome to the studio, Brian Darling, who has now been on council for a year. How's that? A little more than a year now, isn't it?
Yep, just over a year.
So how's that going?
I think it's going well.
Is it everything you expected it to be and more? Because I know when we talked before, during the campaign and after you were just elected, that there was still some, you know, you didn't know how busy it was going to be, what it was going to be like. And, of course, this for you, it was about giving back to the town. Do you feel you've been doing that in the last year or so?
I would like to think so. I mean, that was the reason I went in. I've had lots of emails, most of them in support. So the complaints have been few. I think the mayor and the deputy mayor field a lot of them. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's been busy. I honestly got to say it's been busier than I thought it would be. They were saying maybe 15 hours a week, but...
they didn't laugh at you when they said that, did they?
Well, that was kind of a general number they gave us.
It was only 15 hours.
So what's been in your portfolio since you've been elected to council?
Geez, there's been a lot going on. The downtown master plan and the heritage master plan, I would have to say, are two of the big ones, both coming fairly close to fruition.
Now, I definitely want to talk about those during our time together, but let's just go back a little bit in that first year, and what were some of the things, the challenges that you faced in it, and how about some of the successes?
The challenges, I think, were just getting used to the procedural things. That took a lot of getting used to. You read all the manuals and whatnot, but until you really get into it, mm-hmm. there's a learning curve there.
Now, I know that there's been a big change in the structure, and I was at council on Monday night, and I saw this new system where each of the councillors responsible for a particular area is now chairing the meeting while those reports are delivered. How are you finding that? Is that working for you?
I like it. I truly do. I think it gets you more involved with your portfolio. It gives you experience. Like before, the mayor chaired everything. Mm-hmm. So this is giving you some experience. So if later on, if any councillor wants to move up the ladder, you have a lot more experience in the chair position.
Do you find it, though, in terms of the debate, being able to chair something, yet at the same time you want to discuss things and get your two cents in? How are you finding that working out for you?
I haven't really noticed a problem.
Oh, good.
So it's working out. So it's working out pretty good then, as far as you can see. Well, that's good so far. Now, do you want to get into the specifics there?
I mean,
I know we want to dig
stuff,
down into a couple of the reports that have just been tabled. I know there was a vote yesterday for the downtown heritage plan.
For the master plan,
the downtown master plan. That's right.
Definitely. But before we get to that, one of the things that has taken place is that there's been a restructuring of the committees. And you at one time had the Planning Advisory Committee under your umbrella. And now that's been changed to the Planning and Sustainability. And I'm just wondering if you could explain to the readers what that has meant for you and your portfolio.
It's actually opened a whole new field for me. I'd have to say I'm a bit of a neophyte in the sustainability field. They amalgamated a couple of the committees to reduce the number.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it's again, it's a huge learning curve. There's so much involved in it. It's fairly new in the world of council. And some of the bigger cities have sustainability staff.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe sometime down the road, if things go well, we may be able to add to our planning department and have maybe a half-time sustainability person. But it's a very big issue, and it's a very important issue.
Would you mind just explaining in as simple terms as you can what you mean by sustainability? What does it mean to you, or what does it mean in the definition that you're working under?
The sustainability is more of the green aspect. When building buildings that they're self-sustainable, that we have gray water instead of using all the water going down the drain, some of the gray water from the sink and that can be recycled into the toilets, to flush toilets, solar heating, more insulation, more density for your infrastructure.
Wow.
Along that line.
Now, these are things that you say you're sort of a neophyte to sustainability. So can one assume then, if this is new to council, that sustainability and planning were just not considered in the same sentence, that sustainability has always been something separate and that planning has always been its own thing? And now that you've got to meld the two together, to have, because sustainability in my mind means long-term planning. It means planning, putting something in place that is going to be available for now, but also for the long term. And how do you make it available for the long term? That's, I think a lot of people think that's really what sustainability is about. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, I would say it is.
It's really interesting because before I think this was under the umbrella of the Environmental Advisory Committee. And that was the one, if you remember when we interviewed Henderson, Deputy Mayor Henderson, he spoke about how they were fragmenting these things off and attaching them to other places so that they became more relevant. So I think I can see how those two things get pushed together. It very interesting approach. One of the things that you had before your committee was a recent presentation to council about the West Harbour, the West Harbour lands, the West Beach, and that whole area over to Ontario Street, to have it be declared a nature park. And I know that's been before your committee and it's been before council. I'm just curious what your opinion is of this, because I know the harbour is a very special place. A lot has been said about it, a lot of controversy around it. What do you think of that proposal?
This is my personal opinion. I think the West Beach from Hibernia over, where the Ecology Garden, all that is almost a nature park there now, that I think it should be designated. As far as the West Headland and the harbor area, I think we would tie our hands. There's a lot of potential there for nice parks, probably a little more developed, maybe a bigger marina building in the future, accessible washrooms and that. And if it's designated, everything's designated, we might tie our hands unknowingly.
That's interesting. Now, could you just talk a bit about then how that fits in with the waterfront master plan that's been being bantered around then? How does all that fit together? Because a nature park is different than a nature preserve.
Yes.
But it's also different than just regular parkland. So could you talk a bit about that then?
As far as the Parks Master Plan, it has been identified in the Parks Master Plan for the waterfront area along the harbor to become a nature park in that area. So that's part and parcel of it. To be honest with you, I just was at a parks meeting the other day, and I asked Teresa Bain to give me a copy of the Parks Master Plan. I'd perused it before, but I haven't really got into it in full depth. So I've got a copy now that I'm going to be looking into for those reasons, to see what the Parks Master Plan does along with the Downtown Master Plan, because they all meld together there.
I guess the other thing, too, is if it was to be turned into a nature preserve, that would mean that there would be a lot of environmental constraints on it as well?
That's my understanding, yes.
Wow. All right. The other thing I was curious that's before that committee is the Nickerson Drive. And I'm wondering if you could bring us up to date as to what's happening up there with LeBlanc Developments and the residents of Nickerson Drive. I know that has been an ongoing sort of simmering issue for planning.
There was a lot going on when I first come on council, and it seemed to have all died down. I don't know what Mr. LeBlanc's plan is. He has submitted a proposal to the planning department. There was a series of questions come in from the neighborhood up there and their representatives, and Mr. McGlashan has forwarded those questions to the consultant for Mr. LeBlanc, and they're looking at them now. So I don't know if they're making changes or whatnot, but not much has been brought forward in the past couple months.
Could maybe you just frame out for us what were some of the issues that were going on up there? Can you just describe them for our listeners?
I think the main one was flooding. It's a very low leveled land. There's not much runoff to the creek, and there is flooding now in some of the low lying areas. And I think a lot of the neighborhood there is concerned that when they develop the land behind, that the runoff of the water is going to affect their properties.
Was there also some concern, too, about the natural state of the lands that exist there now, and then transforming them and developing them might take away from the natural aspects of it?
There's a buffer along the creek. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's 50 meters from the creek. So there is a substantial buffer there. This land has been sitting there for a number of years. It's private owner. The sad part is that people have had that in their backyard for years and years. They've become very accustomed to it.
Yeah.
But it is privately owned land.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's something that often becomes problematic, too. I mean, especially if people have had sort of free access to it for a long period of time, right? I mean, isn't there some sort of municipal rule that says if you've had access to it for so long that it's ultimately public? I mean,
I don't know about that, but I certainly remember when I first arrived here and became a reporter back in the Middle Ages. There was a resident up there, a longtime resident who has sold it and has gone on, but he took me into the woods there, and it was quite impressive the amount of wildlife. He showed me what owls that lived back in there. There was quite a few, quite a lot of wildlife back in there. Now, I know it's developed up, and of course the schools and all that stuff has gone in the subdivision, but there's still that sort of natural area that, it is quite significant, I think, for what it does for the natural preservation of that area. So very interesting.
Yes, along with that, they've I don't know if they passed it in the bylaw or what, but they're trying to make a natural path along the waterways for the environment. And yep. I think it's 50 meters either side. Maybe not 50 meters. Maybe it's 50 meters in total. Again, don't quote me on the numbers.
Yeah.
But a substantial width to try to keep it all natural environment. But some of the problems are the people in Nickerson have been using that land for their own private dump site. And they're actually damaging the habitat a little bit taking wheelbarrows full of sod and brush and whatnot and dumping it at the creek's edge. And then it gets washed down the creek. You know,
that's something that a lot of people should be considering as well, because, of course, a lot of people have lands adjacent to streams and waterways here in town. And we know we've had some flooding issues. We're going to take our first break of the hour, though. My guest is Brian Darling. He is our guest today for Consider This Live. And my co-host Rob Washburn and I, we will be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. My guests in studio are Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism, and my regular co-host from Loyalist College, and Brian Darling, who is the coordinator, by the way, for those who don't know, coordinator of planning and development. That's why we're asking him about all these master plans and stuff. Again, you know, just some great information that is available. You can get a lot of this information, by the way, from the town website. Go ahead, Rob. I know you have a question.
I do. I'd like to start off by talking about the downtown master plan, which got its final approval on Monday night. When you look at that document, it appears to be, on the surface at least, sort of a master plan of plans and documents. A lot of them are historic, but some of them are more recent. I'm wondering if you could describe for us, first of all, what is the downtown master plan, and then maybe add to that why it's significant to us.
Well, the downtown master plan is a plan that's putting everything together. In broad terms, it's bringing the whole downtown together. From the both entrances on each end of town, tying in walkways, pedestrian paths from the downtown to the harbor, key links that allow people to, almost like a grid, to go down First Street, which will be a walkway down Second Street, which is, there's tentative plans to make it more of a pedestrian walkway, Victoria Square. More of a people place, I would say, along the Nathan Phillips Square idea, where people can go downtown and not just go downtown to buy one thing and then leave. Go downtown, shop around, have lunch, and then sit down and a real experience. Maybe some musicians playing on the street corner or in the market square. I think our Tasty Tuesdays have been a good example. You know, we've shut down Second Street, and I mean, it's a street you can go down, but Third Street's just like 50 yards over. So it's really not an inconvenience to the townspeople. Yet that has been a very successful event. And if we can get more like that, have more people come downtown and experience it, I think it's going to be very valuable.
But it's more than just a document to talk about, you know, turning the downtown into something more pedestrian-friendly. I know that there's an aspect of it which is to encourage development and to encourage investment. Could you talk a bit about those aspects of it as well?
Yes. Part 5 of the downtown master plan, it mentions a CPI. I think that's the term for it.
The Community Improvement Plan?
Yes, CIP, that's it. That is, let's see, how do I word that? It's a bit of incentive to the downtown core to fits up the facades of their buildings. Mm-hmm. Could be a tax break, could be fix up the second floors, and there's a part there where they can take and hold the taxes for a 10-year period. So mm-hmm. when they put the money into the building, it's increasing the equity of the building for assessment, but they won't increase the taxes. So if it's assessed at $250,000 and they put $100,000 into it to fix up second floors, and the new assessed value is $350,000 for a building, the taxes will remain at the $250,000 for 10 years, is my understanding.
Now, there's also the discussions about the town giving out loans to people to help with development. Is that still in the works?
Yes, it's the CIVI. It's Community Investment Initiative,
mm-hmm.
Venture Initiative. It is. It's an arm's length. I can't think of the word I'm trying to find there. It's an arm's length initiative where a group of people are going to run. It's going to be run like a board,
mm-hmm.
and it cuts through all the red tape. So if somebody comes to town and buys a block and they want to develop it, they help them, like an economic development. They help them get everything together and sort of shorten up the time period it takes, the red tape.
Now, are those monies coming from the town then, or is it from the sort of like a CFDC kind of funding model, like the Futures Development Corporation? Is that what it is, or is it money? Because I know, look, as a former business owner downtown, we had to get a loan from the town at one point. We borrowed money from the town, and mm-hmm. it was a great deal because I believe there was no interest on it, as long as we paid it back within the prescribed time, which we did. And if you were late on it, then the balance would just be transferred to your property taxes for the year end. It was sort of like the way the Bank of Canada used to fund infrastructure funding, where you would get a loan from the municipality, virtually interest-free. And as long as you paid it back within the prescribed period of time, there was no penalties. If you didn't, it was applied to your property taxes. Is this very similar to what
well,
we're
I think
talking about changing?
I think the CIVI is going to – they're looking at the town funding it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's going to be a bit of a controversy. It's different from the CIP. It'll be substantial, but it will be loans. There could be grants in there, but the thing is, if we don't do something to kickstart the downtown, it's...
How much of that is property owners' fault, though? I mean, I used to own a business downtown. I've seen a number of businesses that are downtown. Their second and third floors are basically uninhabitable. They get a tax break right now because those places are uninhabitable. Is that going to change? Are they going to lose that tax break right now? And it's going to be a tax break based on your desire to renovate your property? Because at this point, they don't pay property taxes on that unusable square foot.
That's a bit of a misnomer. It's not a tax break. It's commercial property, and if it's not rented for a 6-month period or for a period, you can apply to have that reimbursed.
Okay, but the reason it's not being rented or uninhabitable is because the owners have decided not to make them habitable. I mean, let's be frank. You know, I mean, I can point to, and I'm not going to name any landlords downtown because I don't want to find myself in court, but the bottom line is there are a number of property owners down there who have successful ground floor store businesses that they rent out, and their upper floors are, for reasons that are quite within their own control, are uninhabitable. A couple of buildings downtown, for instance, that had a fire back in the 50s or the 70s, no one's ever bothered to redo the work up there. They've just sort of closed them off and left them. But because they're uninhabitable, that square footage isn't counted in their assessment. Now, as a former building owner and a person who paid for every square foot, I say, and I know a number of other business owners say, because it's not usable, they don't have to pay. They've got bigger square footage than I do. In a lot of cases, I mean, I've spoken to people like Dave Somerville, who I know uses the upper floors of his building. I'm sure he's not too happy with the fact that people who don't have habitable space get essentially a tax break because they're not paying the taxes on that square footage, even though the reason it's uninhabitable is because of their own doing.
Well, my understanding with the taxes is that the taxes are based on the assessed value of the building.
Mm-hmm. Based on usable square footage.
It's the assessed value of the building. If the top floors are derelict, then the building's only worth so much. But to fix those up is a substantial cost.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, you could do it and do pretty well whatever you wanted. We've gotten a lot wiser with fire codes and building codes. So second means of egress, fire separations from commercial to are very, very, very expensive.
Okay.
And it,
But that still amounts to a tax break for those business owners, though. Those building owners don't have to pay property taxes on that unusable space. That's what it amounts to. And that, in the long and short of it, for a lot of business owners and building owners downtown who are paying the full freight for every usable square foot, they're crying foul. They're saying, why is that fair? Because that you don't want to put the money into your building because it's not perhaps cost effective as a landlord. The rest of the town has to give you a break. You know, it really should be the other way around. As you said a moment ago, if you're going to offer tax breaks to people who are willing to put the money into their buildings, then you should take away the tax break or the implied tax break that exists for people who have unusable square footage.
My understanding, though, is that's provincial legislation that the municipality really doesn't have control over. It's a mm-hmm. provincial statute, not necessarily a local one. And I think that's what's always made it so difficult, because I know this is a long, long-standing complaint by a lot of landlords downtown
mm-hmm.
and by people also that sort of hamstrings everybody, that they can't get past it. What I'm more interested in, though, and maybe, Brian, you could help me with this, is where using the use of taxpayer dollars to loan money to businesses. When does a municipality become a bank, and why don't we just let the banks and the banking system and the normal channels of money lending look after this? Why is it so important, do you feel, that the municipality gets involved with this? Because you seem to be a champion of this.
Well, I feel it's important that we do get involved. To what end, I'm not sure, because I know there's going to be a lot of resistance in that area. A lot of the times when loans are given out for those things, banks, they want to know that it's a very viable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not viable, then they won't lend the money. And the amount of work that's got to be put into these, I don't know if the banks would look at it. I really don't.
If it's such high risk, then why should the town be taking that risk rather if the business community won't take it?
Well, I'm thinking it's the incentive. Lower interest rates, maybe interest-free loans. It's mm-hmm. the stuff the bank's not going to give you. And if it's a commercial mm-hmm. venture like that, the interest rates are higher. So I think it's a break there.
Okay. Now, going back to the downtown master plan, one of the more controversial aspects of it has been the redevelopment the future of the campground, the trailer park mm-hmm. down at the bottom of Division Street. What can you tell us about the future of that area?
Well, there's nothing. The first thing is there's nothing been determined that's going to be done. It was identified in a consultant's report that it's a valuable piece of land and probably could bring in more revenue to the town than it's bringing in now. And it's just a conceptual thing where it's something you can look at. It's no different than when we looked at the West Harbor for more boat slips. It was a conceptual thing. It could have been brought in. They went to the planning stage with the West Harbor, and the community spoke out. They didn't want it. And the same thing may happen with the trailer park. They may come up with a plan. If it's a real good plan and everybody thinks it's a good plan, they may go for it. But if they don't, they want to keep their trailer park, then it may stay. Mm-hmm. That's yet to be determined.
So the master plan then is more of just a suggested path for the next 20 years. It's not, there's nothing set in stone with the master plan.
Absolutely. It's a list, series of recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
These consultants have done a lot of work in other places. They have a real good idea. I mean, everybody has their niche in employment.
What is our niche based on that plan? Based on what the studies have shown, what is Coburg's niche?
Well, I think it's like everybody else is trying to promote their community as for tourism and a place where you can quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people moving into Coburg. The quality of life is what they say they're after.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of plans, though, for the downtown. I mean, there was the revitalization plan mm-hmm. that's been down there. We haven't talked yet about the Heritage Master Plan. There's the Victoria Square plan. There's now this downtown master plan. There's the harbor plan, which integrates with the downtown. I mean, I don't think there's any place in Coburg that has been more studied and more invested in trying to make this viable. What sort of guarantees or what can you say to people who are saying, you know, I think we've spent enough. When are we going to start to see some return?
Well, I think it's starting to show now.
There's How so?
several business, new businesses have moved downtown. We've got a couple of businesses that are opening a second store from the mall. They're moving downtown. They came to council, the Heritage Committee, a few weeks ago with proposals to redo the front of their stores, spend substantial money on them, and this they're doing without any incentives because they want to get it done. There may be incentives for them to do things on the second floor. They have plans for it, whether it ever materializes or not. Mm-hmm. But Chesler Shoes is moving down. They're redoing the front of the two storefronts there. Reno Ferrari has his building downtown, and he's moving his clothing store down and redoing the front of the building, the Bra Boutique, that section. So
will they be leaving the mall, or are they going? Are these second locations?
I don't know. My understanding is they're second locations. I'm unaware of that.
Okay, interesting.
So again, but we're talking about what draws people downtown. So obviously, a burgeoning fashion district, as I like to say. Obviously, more shops mean more customers, means more window shoppers, means more people in and out. We've changed some of the rules with regards to parking. We got parking meters downtown as well now. Has that been a benefit? Have you been hearing that at all? Because I know one of the concerns, and again, I go back to when I was a business owner downtown, one of the things I used to hear from people when they were coming out of the Audrey's, for instance, is, I mean, I still remember a couple of conversations by women who were coming out saying, well, we should go look at that other store, and one woman saying, well, we can't because we've already parked for longer than an hour and I don't want to get another ticket. So we've eliminated that problem. Now they can stay as long as they want, as long as they continue to feed the meter. So are we seeing that as having been a benefit to the downtown?
I think so. The comments I've heard, people don't mind. I mean, you know, you have to pay for your infrastructure somehow. And when visitors come, they contribute to the meters. It helps out a little bit. The parking problems are going to be substantial downtown. There's plans in the downtown master plan, maybe someday for a parking garage.
Mm-hmm. The problem's always been where to put that, right? So we're going to take our first break, or our last break, rather, of the hour. My guest in studio is Brian Darling. He is the coordinator of planning and development for the town of Cobourg, your town Cobourg councillor. And in studio with me is Rob Washburn, my regular co-host for Consider This Live. It's ConsiderThis.ca if you want to go to his website. Stick around, folks. And welcome back to the Drive Time for our last 20 minutes or so, well, 15 or 20 minutes or so. I know you had a question just before the break. So
yeah,
Rob,
I did. Thanks very much, Dave. I wanted now to move on to the Heritage Master Plan because I think that's a very important aspect of our town, and definitely a part of our branding is our historic aspects. Could you tell us, first of all, what is the Heritage Master Plan and why is it important to us?
The Heritage Master Plan has kind of consolidated all the district plans. We have the downtown district area, heritage area, the east end, the west district area, the George Street area. Mm-hmm. It's kind of brought them all together under one plan, and it's developed the plan so that when people want to restore or fix up their buildings, it's a very good series of guidelines for them to work with and parameters to work within.
Now, when you look at the document, it covers an area, I believe, from basically the St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church, that area is straight over to just past St. Andrew's Church. It goes up Division Street to St. Michael's Church, and then it comes down to King Street, just below King Street on a couple of areas. And that's been the Heritage District since the plan was first brought together in the late 80s. What is significant, or what is changing from the old plan to the new plan?
I really don't know if there's a lot of changes. Well, I guess there is because it's a fairly detailed plan. Mm-hmm. It's brought in the new heritage guidelines from the province mm-hmm. under the Heritage Act.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's amalgamated the districts into the one plan.
Yeah. So, but could you maybe explain why it wasn't extended or expanded?
I know there was discussion on that, and there was discussion into making more district areas. one of the talks was Corktown area, Bay Street, Queen Perry down in there is making that another heritage district.
Well, that's interesting because the area there where the Legion is developing was left out, and I know that was something that was very controversial, was the height of that building and the fact that it did not fall within the Heritage District. Therefore, there was some argument around whether the building fit in or not to the surrounding area. So why is that area around the harbor then not included? Because isn't it part of the downtown? Like, if you look at the map, it just absolutely circles around everything but the harbor and the Legion lands.
I really honestly can't give a reason exactly why that is.
Okay. The other thing that's always been interesting about the heritage planning has been getting the teeth to save buildings. Many times buildings get into disrepair, as we've been talking about some of the upper floors not being used. And the buildings deteriorate to such a point that they are historically significant, but then a developer comes along and they want to knock the building down.
Well, you can look at Sidbrook, for instance.
Exactly.
Thank you. In the East End there. I mean, there's a building that was supposed to be, I believe it has been designated historical.
Yes.
And so as a result, what we've seen is developers sort of walk away from those kinds of properties. Do you see sort of, I mean, as Rob said, how do you put teeth into legislation where people can simply allow their derelict buildings to crumble to the ground? And at which point does the town step in to say, okay, look, that's a heritage building, man. You can't just let it go to seed.
Well, my understanding of it is when there's a complaint, the complaint is acted upon. The problem is with us going to Sidbrook and saying, you have to do it, it's like you're picking on them. Why aren't you making this other person do what they have to do to their building? So when there's a complaint, the property standards officer acts on it. And there has been several complaints on Sidbrook. Notices have been sent to the owner, to my understanding again.
Mm-hmm.
And
But there's been other buildings. There was the old Chateau building.
Yep.
There's been many buildings that we've lost at mm-hmm. various times because there has not been any teeth that stop an individual from letting a building go so derelict that it finally crumbles and nothing can be done. Is there anything in the new Heritage Master Plan that is going to give you the teeth to be able to intervene and to hang on to these things that are so historically important to us?
I don't think there's the teeth that you're describing to the extent you're describing. There's some mechanisms in there that to persuade the owners, but I don't think those kind of teeth you're looking at are there. I don't think legally you can do that. There's longer time frames if they mm-hmm. apply for a demolition permit that the town has a longer time frame to look at it to see if something can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like Sidbrook, the Park Theater, there's people out there in the heritage world that are very, very concerned mm-hmm. that it's demolition by neglect, that mm-hmm. it just gets to a certain point mm-hmm. and the engineers come in and says it's not feasible to fix it.
There's really not a whole lot the town can do. I mean, unless the town goes in and says to the property owner, oh, well, that's it. We're buying the property. We're taking it for no, you know, maybe a little less than market value or whatever because of various reasons, right? And other than buying the property, which I'm sure a lot of taxpayers, I know there was a hue and cry when they were talking about buying the Park Theater.
Yeah.
There's also been hues and cries about other properties that the town looked at just for the very purpose of trying to preserve them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a very fine line and you know, it does beg the question, though, how does one walk that line?
Yes. And when you force them, like, again, with Sidbrook, if it's forced, then it becomes a court case. Now it goes to court. Well, we all know how long that takes. Mm-hmm. And again, there's huge costs involved for the community to force that on.
And there's a good chance they wouldn't win anyway.
Probably.
Now, I know you yourself have renovated historic homes. I believe the Poplars is a place that you worked on.
Yes.
And you own property as well. Can you describe to us your views on private property rights versus protecting public heritage? Where do you stand on all that?
Well, it's got to be a love of it. So I love the old buildings.
Mm-hmm.
When we bought the Poplars, we bought it 25 years ago. My brother and I are partners on it. And when we put our offer to purchase in, there was other offers that were higher offers.
Mm-hmm.
But in our condition to purchase, we offered to restore the building. And at the time, the CAP Foundation owned the building, and they couldn't afford to keep it. But they wanted it restored, and that's why we ended up getting it, because we said we would restore the building.
What's your view on restoration versus it just jumped out of my head. I'm sorry. Restoration versus replication. The idea of, you know, putting in vinyl windows that look historic but are not really historic versus taking the old windows out and restoring those and putting them back in.
Well, that's a very touchy subject.
What's your position on it, though?
Well, again, I've put vinyl windows in and some of my buildings long before I got on the Heritage Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing now the value, they say that the wood windows last longer, are just as good as if they're repaired. So the restoration is, to me, the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes cost-wise, it's very expensive. Some people like to take the easy way is just cut the old window out, put the vinyl ones in. I mean, sometimes for the person who's not really experienced in it, they would never know the difference. Mm-hmm. You walk down, it looks nice. They look at the building. Oh, look at this beautiful heritage building.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I have put vinyl windows in, and I wish now that I never had.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had kept the old building. And when we did the poplars, there's some stuff we took out in the interior, which was not designated.
Mm-hmm.
But I still wish I had left it there. So once it's gone, it's gone.
Exactly.
And that's the sad part.
Well, and that's the main motivation behind heritage preservation in the first place, right?
And it seems to be the younger generation. I don't want to pick on them, but they're so busy with life and everything else, they look at it. But the older people, as they grow older, they just have such a deep respect for it.
I know the famous story about Victoria Hall almost became a parking lot.
Yeah.
And now we look at it as one of the centerpieces of civic pride.
Well, it's
and we nearly lost it. I mean, just because of neglect and an apathy towards this kind of thing.
And when you look at the St. Michael's building.
The manse, yeah.
Yeah, the manse south of the church.
Mm-hmm.
It was a shame. They tore that building down to put a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make the parking lot a little bigger. That was a very viable building.
Well, and the old post office at King and Division. Yeah. I mean, that was a glorious building, and now it's a brick structure.
Well, and again, we could talk about the RBC building that used to be on the adjacent corner where CIBC is right now. I mean, there's lots of buildings that have been lost, but it does make the desire then to preserve and protect the ones that are still here.
Yep,
but one of the pushbacks have been when it comes to heritage is how does something become designated a heritage building? Why is my property all of a sudden designated a heritage building? You know, some people all of a sudden wake up one day and their property's been designated or it's on the wish list because, of course, there's that wish list here in town as well. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with property owners who suddenly wake up and realize their house is a heritage home and, oh, my God, that paint job I wanted to do over the summer is now no go?
Well, the nice thing is with the heritage guidelines is people are aware of it and they come. If they come early to the Heritage Committee with a proposal and the Heritage Committee looks at it, lots of times they offer them suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Which a person never thought of. And they go, oh, okay, I like that. I'll do that. I'll paint it that color or I'll restore them. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe there's some incentives there because it does cost money to
Oh, absolutely. And there was a situation, I mean, a famous situation in downtown Coburg over the last few years where a business owner wanted to redo the front of her building. She went through the hoops and all of the other stuff. She picked what were deemed heritage colors, but apparently they weren't on our heritage color palette, so she wasn't able to use those colors. And, I mean, there's a lot of that happening. How do you deal with it? I mean, how does the Heritage Committee deal with the fact that, you know, you've got people out there who own their buildings that want to beautify them, make them that much better, but because they don't fit into the wheelhouse of what this group of people say, who may or may not own heritage properties themselves. I mean, I know there was a lot of animosity from that particular business owner when it came to the Heritage Committee because, look, you know, I've gone to the province, I found heritage colors, I'm going to paint it the heritage, but because they're not on our particular palette, they don't qualify, even though they're still heritage colors. I mean, that obviously creates a lot of negative energy around the Heritage Committee as well as for that business owner, right?
It's the same as everything. Mm-hmm. There's some that are so pro for it and some that are dead against it. It's trying to find that balance. That's the hard part.
So as the counselor, though, I mean, that's got to be nightmares at the grocery store, you know? I mean,
well, it hasn't been that bad because most people that own older homes have mm-hmm. bought them because they like the older home. They like its character and its charm, and most people want to preserve that and protect it. So there's the majority of people want to do the right thing and go along with the Heritage Committee. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, too, because in the downtown master plan, there's all these incentives that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
In the Heritage Master Plan, there is another set of incentives. There's a heritage loan. There's heritage tax incentives. Mm-hmm. There's a permit fee program, and there's also a development charge credit that you can get if you own a heritage building. Again, why is it that the municipality is putting so much money into this, and we don't hear a lot about these programs and their availability?
Well, I think it's because of the cost of doing these things, mm-hmm. and if we can give somebody a little incentive to do the right thing for the community, mm-hmm. then that's what they're going
to do. But to Rob's point, though, how does one find out about these incentives? If, you know, the only time you hear about them is on occasion when, you know, we do a show like this or something like that. I mean, you don't even when, and again, I go back to when I was owning a business downtown. I mean, we managed to find out about them. We talked to one of the staff downtown or at town hall and basically said, well, you know, there is this. And we were like, oh, well, that's nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were able to find that. But if we hadn't been told,
I think that is part of the problem, that
it's not being communicated.
The communication thing. Mm-hmm. It's on the website.
Just a really quick to wrap up, what can we look forward to this spring in terms of development? What should we be keeping an eye out for? What's on the books?
I think that the most interesting one at this time is the new Hamilton Township Farmers Mutual building
mm-hmm.
that's being proposed for number 2 highway just west of, I think, Wilkins Gate.
Yeah.
A nice new building they're putting up there, bigger, I think 16,000 square foot, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to the old house that they're in right now? Do you know?
Well, I imagine it'll get sold, repurposed. It's a nice building. Yeah. I don't think it's big enough for them, and they've decided to build a new one. But
by the way, did you know that there was a cemetery up next to that building?
Just off the 401 you're talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
I found that out the other day myself.
Yeah, didn't know that.
Well, I want to thank you for being here, Brian. Thanks for the conversation, and we'll bring you back when we need you again next time to talk about some of the great stuff. Thanks for coming in, though. As we said, we hadn't spoken to you since the election. Rob, always a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Consider this live. Any idea who we got coming in next week? Do we remember?
I believe we have someone from the Sexual Assault Center coming to see us to talk about the Gian Gomeshi trial.
Very good. So, yeah, sorry, it's Kawartha Sexual Harassment Center are sending someone to talk to us. So that's a good thing. So stay around for that one, folks. I'm Dave Glover. I want to thank you for tuning in. We have a couple of seconds for some BTO, but other than that, thanks again. And we thank Brian for being here as well. And we will be back tomorrow here for the Drive Time on Truly Local Radio. This is Northumberland 89.7.